All right, you ready?
I'm ready.
We're back. It's episode 84 of the TV Talk Machine podcast. I'm Jason Snell. I'm across the internet from me. He's the chief TV critic of The Hollywood Reporter, and he's eating nuts. It's Tim Goodman. Hi, Tim.
Wow. I kind of just totally botched that whole intro because I was eating food, but I have to have strength to get through this.
That's right. So, you know, pros, protein gives you strength for a podcast. Cons, eating on a podcast.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. It's bad. It's bad. I thought that I liked it because we're quick.
Thus ends the streak of 83 consecutive podcasts with strict professionalism.
People have no idea like how quickly we jump into it.
No.
And clearly I did not as
Wait,
well.
You said let's go. I'm ready. Said, and then you're go. Like, oh you're no, like, I'm thinking better of it now.
I think I have a mouthful of nuts.
Well, I compiled the letters for this episode in record time because you said so. I could do it now and I hadn't done the work yet. So it's the ramshackle haphazard TVTM with number 84. Yes. I was looking at your stuff. So you wrote a couple of pieces that I saw on Hollywood Reporter this week. Before we talk about your appreciation of Game of Thrones, we should at least put a little stake in the ground for your review of Bloodline season 2. I was going to give you a data point, which is I watched the first episode of Bloodline season 1 when it came on, and I thought, yes, looks good actors, really interesting, never watched another episode of it. So,
well, in many ways, you probably benefited from that, because those of us who did watch all of the season 1 experienced lag. So the pacing problems from season 1 were incredibly annoying. And then there would be a payoff. But then at a certain point, it's like that old, you know, there's a story about the guy who – a true story, actually. Well, I'm sure this probably happened many, many times. But someone letting a blimp go has to have that front rope and unhoisted, I guess, from somewhere in the airport. Mm. And up it goes. And someone who survived it said, when you're going up, you've basically got about 2 seconds to say, I'm going to let go and take the fall, or you just never let go. And then generally you die. So I think that same thing happened. And that sounds overly cruel for the Bloodline review. But I think once you're involved, once you're still holding on to Bloodline and you don't let go, you have to finish it all the way through. And that's it's such a slog. And I got through, and there's some enjoyment there. There's great acting. There were interesting twists about how things developed, but there were also kind of annoying, like, roll your eyes like, oh, really? Mm. Oh, so that's what you're going to do with that? But all told, once you put the effort in for season 1, I wouldn't have gone back. Had I known what I was getting into, I wouldn't have gone back and kept doing it. But I got the reveal. I got how it happened. And then just for a little prick in the balloon of trying to feel good about the show, they threw a quickie twist in at the end that was groan heavy. And that's basically the setup for season 2, which takes place one day after the last episode. And I could barely get through two episodes of the current season, mostly because I still had a hangover from season 1. So I do not recommend it.
Yikes.
Yeah, that's really not an endorsement.
It's too bad. I like Kyle Chandler, Linda Cardellini, you know, but
yeah, and Ben Mendelsohn was really the. I mean, both of those guys are great actors, but
yeah.
Ben Mendelsohn,
yeah,
fantastic actor in season 1. You know, I won't tell you what happened to him in season 1, but he's back, but not back in a way that makes it worth it. So there's really no reason for a second 2. Yeah, for a season 2. Yeah, sigh, heavy sigh.
Yeah. Wow. You also had a lot of balloon related metaphors there. I'm just saying.
It's popping balloons, holding on to things.
You can almost spell balloon with the letters in Bloodline, but you can't. There's no A.
So let's say if you're like somebody who helped create Bloodline and you're listening to this, you're like, what are these guys doing? What are they even talking about?
Who are these assholes? I'm going to check the box. I got the pen
you
out.
You check the box.
I'm checking the box.
Wow.
There it is.
Wow.
Yep. Yep. So let's talk about something else. There's more appreciation. You let some love out this week on THR.com as well. You let the love flow a little bit. It's a little unusual from you, but here it is. You just decided, even though it's been on forever and you know, you don't need to review it per se, you felt like after five episodes of season six, it was time to let a little love out for Game of Thrones.
Yeah, it was a complicated love letter to Game of Thrones, but I kind of felt as I was, and I always did, but this season in particular, you know, it's hard to sort of balance the fact that I am secretly kind of a fanboy of the series, even though I didn't read the book, but I'm also a critic who appreciates it and likes it, but has serious issues with the pacing and as I note in there, you know, we'll never get past the 10 versus 13 episodes argument, etc. But like this year, I think it's then the part that's part of why I wrote it here. I'm punching my fist and just to make the point stronger. You can hear that on the line. I just thought, God, it's moving so much faster and it's so much more joyful. Partly because I think the Starks are finding each other and they're not cutting up, you know, the Greyjoys, and they're not, you know, it's like, it's not just so awful and turgid and not going anywhere. There's movement, things are happening. You can see an end, and I don't know if that's because there's no more books that they're working off of, or just because, as I note in the piece, five seasons and 50 episodes has got a lot of backstory. And if you sort of get through that and various levels of enjoyment, and now the story is opening up for all to all of it to come to fruition, which is lovely. I love it.
It feels like it's a combination of things. It feels like it's the third act of the story that they've reached. This is when it all, you know, the we got the really dark part where everything looked grim and awful, and now things are starting to turn around, which is not to say that bad things aren't continuing to happen, but you get the sense that something's turning around. I do think it's the book thing, though. I think they're at the point where they can't adapt George R.R. Martin anymore because the books aren't out yet, even if they've seen like part of the next book. Like they literally now have to map out where they're going. They know what his story is going to be and what their story is going to be. I really believe that they know everything that they're going to tell now, and I think that's what we're seeing, is they have an outline and a plan for moving the story forward, and they no longer have to kind of pay service to some of the stuff that George Martin put in the books. They can make more of their own decisions now that those books are completely off the table. And it just feels, you know, not to bring it back to Lost again, but it feels like Lost to me when they were like kind of stymied, and they finally said, look, we need to plot out the end of the show and make a deal with ABC for how long we're going to run, and now we know where we're going. And the show got a lot more momentum once it did that. That feels sort of like what's happened with Game of Thrones.
But you're agreeing, though, that they're probably doing a little bit of that or much of that with his blessing. Like,
okay. I think it's based on his. I think it's based on his outline, essentially. I think that they've said, I mean, like, so the example, without getting into too much detail, about episode 5, which aired last week, which was great. I agree with you. Great season all around. There's a revelation about, let's say a revelation about the origin of Hodor and his name and how he came to be who he is in the show. And the producer said that's from George Martin. Like, George R.R. Martin told them this is what his intent was there. So I feel like they're working off of his map, but now they're not, you know, they're free to move ahead because they aren't just adapting a book anymore. It's more like they're just adapting an outline. And I think that must be freeing to them to use a much more of a TV pace maybe than a book pace that they were on.
Yeah, I think you're right. And that's key, the adapting the outline. Like, he's telling them, you know, this is where these things are going to, the Hodor backstory is fantastic. And but you're right. I think it probably frees them. And because I think that they also just first of all, they're wonderful writers, and I think they've done an excellent job, to this point. And I think it was a really impossible task that they're tackling, and they're doing a marvelous job. But I think that they like him so much, and they are fans of the book so much that they kind of want to get it all in, and they don't want to shrift things, and they have a respect for it. And I maybe sometimes that made them make decisions they wouldn't have done as TV writers.
I think so. Stuff that, you know, he is, George R. R. Martin, you know, the reason these books are 1,000 pages long is that he's not just telling the one story. He's got lots of coloring around the edges that he likes to do. And then you've got that and you're like, oh, but I really like that thing that's coloring around the edges. We'll put it in there. Well, they don't have that now. They don't have the stuff around the edges. Really, they've got the outline. I do also wonder if they were stalling a little bit, hoping that that next book would be done and get out, and that they could, and if maybe they slowed down their pace a little bit, hoping that they would get it. And then they didn't get it. So now that's, they're just like, all right, we gotta move now. Because there was, even like a year ago, there was some thought that George Martin was going to have that book, the next book in the series, out this spring. And it didn't happen. So I wonder if maybe they were really hoping to get the next book. And once it didn't, they realized they were off the track now. And they just had to be their own people and take what they know of his storyline and just go with it and take their best shot. And I feel like after 5 years, there's trust there on all sides. And you know, their vision for the TV show is supported by the fans of the show, regardless of the books. So maybe they finally feel free.
That's probably true. And it's coming out. And I think the piece that I did was just, you know, I've watched all 5 episodes that have aired. And every time I'm there, I'm excited. Like, yeah, it's Sunday. I'm excited. I want to watch it right away. I want to be on Twitter and I want it to be ruined. I never fast forward through the opening credits. I like the music. I like the characters, and this seems like the first time in a long time as a critic, the joy of watching the show kind of meshes with that fanboy element, where you're like, yes, this is great, I love it, and I don't have to have that part where like, we're flipping around from people. I mean, there still is that, and there will always be that because there's so many characters, but there's just a real urgency, and there's improved pacing and movement on these storylines, and it's just so much fun to watch. I wanted to, and you know, it also, it's timely because it's the same things happening with the Americans. All those things, all the storylines they built are coming to fruition now, and I was able to sort of tack that on as saying, well, how do you justify this thing of this love of the show and be raving about it when you've already said, you know, this is kind of a critic's, you know, dilemma, where you've already said in print many times that. And certainly recently, that The Americans is the best show on television. And I'm trying to say, you know, there's a lot of great shows. Just because I might move one above the other doesn't take away from the ones that aren't number one. They're still great shows. They're just an opinion. So I kind of mixed that in there as well. And I had to fess up that I've never rooted for Game of Thrones to win Best Emmy, because there's been shows it's been running against that I preferred, namely Mad Men and Breaking Bad. And so... But I think this might be the year. I mean, obviously they won it last year, and as I point out in this column, they're a huge juggernaut right now because they broke the record last year with 12 wins. And you know, if we're past, I'm assuming since they broke the record, we're past the point of wondering whether, because it's a genre series, will it ever break through? Now that it's broken through, if Emmys hold tradition, they could do it again. They could win again. Sure. So, and that'd be fine with me. I think I'm perfectly happy with that.
I'll point out it's funny. The Americans is a genre series too. It's just a spy series instead of a fantasy series, right. But still a very genre kind of show. Talk about super serious issues and in a more grounded way than a show with dragons in it. But, yeah, I think I'm with you. I think it's great. This is the only show that it's sort of become a Monday ritual. When I have lunch on Monday, I go back and watch like key scenes from the episode. I watch them again, and I never watch anything again because there's too much other stuff to watch. And I go back and I watch Game of Thrones, not the whole episode usually because I don't have that much time, but the key stuff. And I find myself doing that every episode this season. I've done that.
Wow. And I applaud that because I actually find myself going back. I will watch full episodes during the week. And as I noted in that piece, it's the very few series I've ever thought of watching from the beginning and going through. And I would say there's probably no more than 4 of those on my to-do list. Game of Thrones is number one. And so I was also trying to justify that in some way, or at least explain it. And that's why I called it kind of a complicated love letter to Game of Thrones, because it's the one I want to watch, like, first and foremost, from beginning to end, because those episodes bring so much joy. And it's a series that in some ways, and you could probably relate to this, it's sort of freed me up as a critic where I'm fine reading, it has to be a really, really good recap. And I'm fine reading spoilers of things and reading other writers, because if they do a really good job doing that, then it makes my appreciation of the show so much better. And to me, I haven't found anybody better than Joanna Robinson from Vanity Fair, also a San Francisco resident, and somebody I've been championing as a writer for a long time. She's really amazing, and her deconstructions, of Game of Thrones are really illuminating to me for somebody who forgets things, for starters, uh-huh. Did not read the book. She remembers stuff from, I can't remember stuff that's happening in this season, you know, much less everybody's name. I'm just terrible at that. And then she's like, boom, boom, boom. This was a connection to season 1, 2, 3. This is from season 3 connects to season 5 or 6 or whatever it is. At 6, I guess is what we're in. And she's just really good. And then she'll say, okay, here's my theories about where I think it's going, but there are spoilers if you're not a book reader. And I joyously read those. It does not take away anything from the series to me. In fact, it adds elements to it. But I think you read them all. Is that correct?
I did.
Mm-hmm.
But I like her. I like her stuff. I forget. And as somebody who is doing a post-episode review podcast on the Incomparables TV podcast every week, I'm not on every week, I'm on almost every week, I can't remember things. There's inevitably the next day there's somebody going, oh, don't you know that this is this guy? And it's like, or didn't you said this name, but it's actually this guy. And it's like, no, there's a lot of characters. I read all the books. I've seen all the episodes, and yet I'm not going to remember everything. So I'm impressed with her, her knowledge and the how quickly she gets out with those analysis pieces. It's great stuff.
It's really good. And I'm always keen to, you know, I don't read a lot of other people, certainly for not recaps question, you know, air quotes around them, because I think that's a waste of time. Not only for the people who do them, but for me as a reader trying to read them. But for her, if you're going to add value to it, that's what I call a deconstruction with added criticism. And hers always have that in there. And she also does podcasts as well. She's very talented. But yeah, that has really increased my appreciation of Game of Thrones.
All right, should we mention Peaky Blinders?
Yeah, like why not? Like here's the I'll let's get to Peaky Blinders in a short roundabout way, where I was actually at a school function, and some people were like, oh well, you know what? We're just amateurs. What are you watching? And that's always a confusing question for me. I want to call up the 46 best shows from 2016 or 2015 and say basically all of these in some iteration, because I can never remember what's going on, or it always seems pretty obvious, like, oh yeah, Game of Thrones and The Americans, that stuff. But they were reading a bunch of or watching a bunch of British stuff, and I told them, look, I love that I haven't seen a lot of British stuff. And a lot of foreign things. And so they were touting a series called River, not The River, which a friend of mine, John Doyle, a critic in Toronto, was his number one for 2015. So I'm going to go watch that. But I noted to them that Black Mirror and Peaky Blinders and all these things kept coming up that everybody had seen that were British shows and I had never seen. And of course, they were not airing here in a way that I needed to review them. And so I would get to them eventually. And I did that. I binged all of Black Mirror. And then when I started to watch Peaky Blinders, which I'm still behind on, I had heard so much about it. And I watched it and I was like, wow, yes, I totally love this series. And I believe third season's about to start and I'm still catching up. But it's a really wonderful series. And I think that certainly people can go online and read that and watch that and if they haven't already and they'll really love it. So that's coming up the 31st and you can find that on Netflix.
Great. More. And I just read a story that said it's been picked up by BBC for a couple more seasons. So presumably it will pop up down the road. It's not fading away.
No, it's not. And I think that gives people reassurances, and it makes them want to watch more. So yeah, so it was a fun discussion, and we were turning each other onto stuff, and they were surprised that I hadn't seen River, and they had never heard of Happy Valley. So it was a fun little discussion that didn't involve American shows.
Should we do some letters?
Absolutely, because you haphazardly collected them.
I did collect them, so mm-hmm. we should probably read them. But before we do that, I'm going to do something not haphazardly. Well, okay, maybe slightly haphazardly, which is I'm going to tell you about our sponsor. They're back. Harry's, once again, a sponsor, HARRYS.com. This is a tremendously good shaving products that you get over the internet. Mm-hmm. If you've been paying too much for your shaving products, or your shaving products of choice, your razors and such, are of a poor quality, Harry's can take care of both of those things at once, because they make their own razors. They're very high quality. There's no middleman, and they ship them right to your door, so you don't have to go out in public and deal with the stink of humanity. You can, and it's for half the price of the leading brand. So how about that? You get a good shave at a good price, and you don't have to see people. It is the best thing in life. Yes. And you can get it all with Harry's. I use the Harry's razor every day. You got yours, I know. Tim?
Oh, yeah. And Harry's razor. I got mine. I love it because we are both fans of it, and I do use it. It's always great to have a sponsor that you're already mm-hmm. using. And I just re-upped and got some of their new shave cream, and love it. And I'm going to be taking it to the ATX festival as I go. It travels well, but yeah, nice. I'm getting great shaves, so I'm very happy.
Smooth as a baby's bottom. Also, the one of the things I like about the shave cream is I've got a little tiny bottle. You talk about flying, going to Austin for ATX. I have a little clear plastic bottle that is the size of allowed through airport security, and a big pressurized can of shaving cream. You can't do that. But I was able to just squeeze some of the Harry's lotion out into the little bottle and take it with me when I travel. It's great. I don't have to worry about like shaving with soap or something when I get to my destination. It's great. So I know that's a little obscure, but it's right there. There it is. Harry's one razor has everything you need. 5 German crafted blades, the flex hinge, the lubricating strip, the whole deal. Really great shave. And there's a starter kit. You can get started with Harry's for $15. That includes a razor, 3 blades, and your choice of either the shave cream or the foaming shave gel. And you can get $5 off your first purchase. So that would take that starter kit down to $10 by using the code TVTALK, one word, TVTALK, at checkout. So use that code, get a whole month's worth of shaving for $10. Check it out. Go to HARRYS.com. Code is TVTALK, and you'll get $5 off and help support TV Talk Machine. Stop compromising and give Harry's a try today. Thanks, Harry's, for sponsoring TV Talk Machine.
Thanks, Harry's. Yeah, we have a pretty good looking, pretty good groomed bunch of listeners, the male ones out there.
Yeah.
I'm assuming that the women are already, that smell amazing.
My understanding, too, mm-hmm. is that the Harry's shave cream can be used. In my family, the Harry's shave cream, I'll put it this way, is used by male and female residents of my home alike.
Excellent.
I'll just leave it there. Mm-hmm. All right, Dean of the 707 Travel Update. We should have
just
a little...
never gets off the road.
We just should have a little jingle for this. So Dean is watching The Pretender... in Delaware. Hi, I'm in Delaware.
Wow, The Pretender. I was never that big of a fan of that.
No, but the masked scheduler told
a very good story.
He told a great story about it. I never really loved The Pretender either. It was weird and strangely Canadian. But anyway, the center in The Pretender is supposed to be located in the fictional city, according to Dean, of Blue Cove, Delaware. I did not fact check that. No Pretender fact checking, but I'm just going to trust Dean in the 707. He's in Delaware after all.
Uh-oh. That could lead us astray. You know how that goes.
Pretender fans write in and tell me why we're wrong. Joe Lyon on Twitter wrote in to ask, why is there no love for the Goldbergs from pretty much anyone? It's not even worthy of a mention when listing ABC Renewals. The Goldbergs is the most enjoyable TV find my wife and I have made in years, but I never hear a thing about it from critics. What do you think?
I have written about the Goldbergs quite extensively, and I have mentioned them on Twitter and stuff like that to keep it going. But I will say he is right about that. There is a Goldberg contingent that is out there, and I love the Goldbergs, and I've actually apologized to those guys because I tend, for whatever reason, there's like a jinx. I've just, you know, you say, oh, right, Fresh Off the Boat and Black-ish, and you'll move on. And you're like, ah, I really like that one as well. So, yeah, Goldbergs, I did tell them one time, you know, guys, I'm sorry that I keep forgetting to mention you when I do like my favorite American sitcom shows on network television. But it's true. They're really good. So I do share it, but I probably should be a little more vocal about that.
See, so I hope Joe Lyon feels better now.
Yeah, he's an agent for change.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Our friend Curated TV on Twitter wrote in to say, I mm-hmm. want to like The Path more than I do. I've only seen 3 episodes. Help. You wrote back to Curated TV and said, stick with it, right?
Absolutely, stick with it. The finale was just, I think, last week. Which I haven't got to yet, a bit behind, story of my life. I think I should have a little save get on online where I just said, yeah, story of my life, because critics start things, they hard to finish them, but for time reasons. But I liked it, I thought it got better as it went along, as a matter of fact. But I also liked the first couple of episodes that he was a little wary about. And that was because I'm always fascinated about how religion and faith are treated on television. Because it's interesting to me, spirituality and faith and not so much organized religion, unless it's done in a really interesting way. Like I kind of like how they're doing it on The Americans. But yeah, it's a fresh approach to that. And I wanted to know where it was going, heading forward. I thought there were some really interesting, quirky and creepy bits about it. So, and I like where I've gotten so far, but I've stalled out. I haven't had a chance to watch the rest of it.
All right, let's see. We'll go to Marcus from the 514, now in the 404. Marcus says, after seeing what NBC has coming this fall, wouldn't those fake 30 Rock shows like America's Kids Got Singing, Bitch Hunter, Death Bank, MILF Island, etc., get better ratings than what they're doing? You could even have a Rural Juror miniseries and a live-action Samurai I Am a Rye. Okay, once you stop giggling, this may not be that crazy, right? I'd like your honest opinions as, quote, experts.
Wow. Quote marks.
We're so-called experts.
Wow, that is.
What really, do you think, Jack Donaghy for chief programmer at NBC? Is I think what Marcus is advocating.
Yeah, I think that the American public will watch pretty much anything, and that's you know been proven true in more than a decade plus of watching television. But here's the thing to know about. And it's caught up into the context of actually how well the network's doing. If CBS didn't have the Super Bowl, they would have not finished first. It would have been an NBC. So it's NBC's made quite the comeback. They're feeling pretty confident. I think you know we've had this discussion, but
would you say they're proud as a peacock?
They could be. Although you know, I will say that I still laugh because their stuff is so kind of their comedies. I think. Superstore and the Carmichael show. I think those shows, I would argue that if you went back, because I remember saying something about this, I don't think NBC had any faith in those shows. I think it was kind of putting them on and burning them off. And then they turned out to be kind of successful. And they're like, oh, look, we're back in the comedy business. which is, you know, that's what you do in network television. An accidental hit falls in your lap, even though you didn't want it. You were trying to kill it. And it's just kind of like the producers or something. So, yeah, they're doing okay. So I wouldn't say like anything will work better than their shows because they're actually finishing number 2. So
there you go, Marcus.
Mm-hmm.
Nice try.
So maybe we're not smart enough to as the mass scheduler. I want to rebut the mass scheduler on this podcast,
all
by
right.
the way, because you know, we linked to him and he linked to us and we both tweeted everything out. Of course, I don't have any problem with him trying to tear me a new one, which he pretty much does every time he writes something.
Accurate.
But I did tell him on Twitter that he's factually inaccurate. I've never, ever in my life said that I could run a network or wanted to. So, you know, I looked at – it's fine because I look at it and I'm like, okay, I kind of see what you're trying to get here, but that part's not true. And am I really wrong about the decline of network television? I mean, we just the ratings just came out and it was like – wow, 5 years ago, people would have killed for the ratings they were getting then. and have been embarrassed about what they're getting now. 10 years ago, they would have shot themselves if they got the ratings they're getting now. So the downward arrow pretty much on network has been pretty consistent. But, you know, he's in the industry, and he made a living through it. So I know he supports them, and I try not to be too critical because I do like some of the shows. And I think that he and I agreed that I thought the networks were making smart decisions at Upfront. They were kind of going with familiar concepts and not going for like cable kind of quality, because they can't do it well. And they need something that's like just entertain people. That's what network television should be about. Don't strive for greatness. Strive to be very good, like CBS, and very entertaining. Then you're going to make it work.
You're just playing into his hand when you talk about him, because he just listens to hear us talk about him, and you did it again.
And then he'll say,
you win this round, Mass Scheduler.
Go! He did it again! He lured us in!
That's okay. He'll reciprocate by writing an article that mentions you unflatteringly.
Unflatteringly.
Amazing. He wins again. He wins both ways in this. One of these days, somebody in a Mexican wrestler, a Lucha Libre mask is going to appear at my door, and I'm going to go, and it'll be the Mass Scheduler. I just know it. This one's from Trish in the 650. So local. Uh-huh. All local. She says, I thought the Good Wife series finale's use of Regina Spektor's Better was brilliant. What are your favorite series finale songs specifically played over the last scene? My favorite is Sia's Breathe Me from 6 Feet Under, and the score from Lost that played over the closing scene. Very specific. I don't know. Can you think of, Don't Stop Believing over the end of The Sopranos is pretty great, actually. Interrupted in the middle.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. I don't know. I it hasn't struck me as...
Yeah,
there was one where, we talked about this last week, just about good endings, and we had tons of ideas for that. But actually, the songs that do it, I would never. I like Regina Spektor, but I would have never watched the Good Wife family. good riddance. But no, I don't have a. I don't know of a song that I played over the end credits.
All right. I'm going to go with Don't Stop Believing. And thanks to Trish, I went back and I watched the last scenes from Lost. For the first time, I think, since it aired, and I cried like a baby. So thanks a lot, Trish.
Good job, Trish.
I gotta watch. I guess I gotta watch Lost again sometime. I miss it. I loved that show.
You know, I started that with my kids, right?
Oh,
and,
yeah.
Never. They loved it, but we never got through the first. I mean, there's just too many interruptions in their lives and my lives. We just couldn't get any consistency. So we're almost at the end of season one. I'm hoping to get them into season two and then probably stop there.
I have a friend who watched who basically binged the entire show for the first time. She hadn't seen it either. And she did it with her family and everybody loved it, which was cool. I think Lost plays a lot better when you can go at your own pace and not have it like it was for the rest of us spread out over so long with so many breaks.
Right. That was very frustrating. And I still want to do it. I just think that they live busy lives. That's really hard to do.
Yeah. Let's see. We have Alex in the 908. This is a big one. Alex says, after kickstarting the recent string of factual errors on the show, I'm happy to have an opportunity for a little bit of redemption. In this week's episode, an emailer wondered why Marvel and ABC hadn't considered shifting their shows to the cable network Freeform, since Marvel isn't a great brand partner with ABC and their co-productions have not found a strong footing on the broadcast network. You guys argued this would never happen because production budgets would have to be so small and Freeform is more or less a joke. Well, it turns out, and I knew this and forgot it, it turns out Marvel and ABC already are working on a show together for Freeform. News broke last month that Marvel and ABC Signature Studios are working together on a Cloak and Dagger adaptation for Freeform. Cloak and Dagger are an interracial team crime-fighting duo/romance that originated in Marvel Comics as a parable for the dangers of drug abuse back in the day. Yeah, it was in the 80s. The creator was a guy named Bill Mantlo, who created some of my favorite comics when I was a kid reading comic books. And they're a great set of characters. So as Alex goes on, sounds perfect for Freeform if you ask me. I think that, you know, a show built for Freeform is going to have a very different budget than a show like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., which cannot be moved to Freeform without sort of like just dissolving. But the idea that they're building a show for that channel That's cool. So he says, I hope this can be the first step in my path of penance as I make up for bringing great shame upon this great podcast of yours. Signed, Ashamed Alex in the 908. And then P.S. Here is an article about the news from THR in order to prevent any doubt of the validity of this information. And he has a link to the story. Thank you, Alex, providing your own fact checking.
Thank you, Alex. And I also love that it connects to my magazine.
Yeah, of course.
My outlet. But I've said here many times, and of course, everybody there knows it. I tend not to pay attention to that until it's on my desk.
Yes.
But I'm glad that this development news is good. It sounds like both of you are really happy about it.
So Marvel is, well, I think that's also interesting that that's another angle. We talked about Netflix and about ABC. This is another angle where they are exploring if there are cable options in ABC's family of networks that they can use for Marvel properties too. So they'll find out, but they are trying that out. That's interesting stuff.
And we'll, it makes sense to get to hook them young and then keep coming. Yeah. No doubt about
it. Exactly. And that's going to be a younger skewing kind of concept because it's a couple of teen characters. So, all right, let's see. Let's go to Ian. And Ian will explain where he's from. He says, hi guys, the last time I put some text in a box to you was about firearms and how all of it is not a thing in TV programs. If you remember that, Ian was our firearms expert.
Yes.
Apparently I forgot to include my area code. It stings, doesn't it? He says, I'm originally from the +44.
Okay.
So from England, I'm now in the 951. Yep. The 951, more specifically Hemet. Woo.
Wow.
You are out there.
So basically, to keep up with the British thing, he's been relegated. If he's in Hemet, he's been relegated.
He's been relegated.
If he was in England or London or wherever he was, and then he was in Hemet, I guarantee you he's been relegated.
Yeah, it's hot in Hemet. Hemet is like on the way. It's kind of not on the way to hell. It's sort of on the way to Palm Springs, but kind of not. But it's out in the, it's in your greater Temecula region. It's way out there. It's not so great.
But I'm sure it's grown since I've ever been down there.
My parents spent a few summers in Temecula back not too long ago, and we drove out there a few times. Woo, it's way out there.
Oh,
and it's really
goodness.
Hot.
Yeah. I think there's a Lake Hemet. I think there's a... Mm.
Could be.
Man-made lake out there.
I'm not going to fact check that one either. So anyway, Ian goes on to say, I was going to say there's no way either of you would know it without looking it up, Hemet, I guess. But then I remembered that for some reason everyone in America has been here or knows someone who's been here. It's also used occasionally as the nowhere place people come from in movies and books before joining the military. Anyway, yes, we know where Hemet is. We're Californians. We know where it is. Mm-hmm. So here it is. A full-on absolutely not a thing. It's a peach. I have a few episodes back, so I hope I'm not duplicating something someone else has said. Here's what it is. Burnouts and drifting cars in TV shows. For the longest time now, cars have come standard with traction control. The ability of the car to modulate throttle input automatically to stop tires, and he betrays his +44 origins here by spelling tires with a Y. Tires from breaking loose from the road. I think we can safely say there hasn't been a road car sold in America without traction control this century. Add to that the development of traction control into ABS, anti-lock brake systems, into full-on vehicle stability control. It gets technical, but basically it's both the systems working together. Jumping in a car and peeling out in a cloud of tire smoke or drifting around a corner means you physically have to push the buttons on the dashboard to turn the system off every time you turn the engine on. Once upon a time, these systems were invasive if you wanted to drive fast, but that time is long gone. Only a fool or a show-off would turn them off, and in the real world, drifting sideways around a corner is nowhere near as fast as using the mechanical grip to corner at real speed. So next time you see a modern cop, not a cop TV show where there's a high speed chase with cop cars and bad guys' cars sliding through intersections in the chase scene, it's time to shake your head, chuckle, and say out loud, it's not a thing. Ian.
Wow.
In Hemet.
Hemet. Ian's. Yeah.
Strong letters this week.
I'll clap for that one because that. I gotta say that is funny and true. You would actually have to push a button to undo all that.
Yeah,
that's really good. Yeah, I hadn't even thought about that. See, the things that we just watch and we take for granted.
I know, but it's because It's like touching, I think one of the things that started this was the touching an iPhone screen and having it beep every time you touch it is not a thing, right? And holding it up to your face and having it stay on is not a thing. And yet the reason some of these things happen is because we think that's how the world works, even though it doesn't. And it would seem weird if they didn't do those sorts of things. And it's totally not a thing. So thank you, Ian. You've now I see why Ian moved to America, because he is an expert on firearms and cars.
It's perfect. He's like a he's a bona fide Yank.
Welcome to America, Ian. Yeah. From the +44 and now in Hemet.
That is tremendous.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's all the letters. Should I do the numbers, or do you have things to Columbo me with?
I do not.
All right.
I don't know why that's always a thing.
I'm just
You gave me a
complex about it. It's fine. Yeah. It's fine. All right. So here's how you can reach us and be part of the show: by sending in things that I will compile hastily and then read out, and then Tim will respond to. You can send us an email, podcast@tvtalkmachine.com. You can post on our Facebook page, facebook.com/TVTalkMachine. And, of course, you can tweet at us at TVTM, or you can tweet us directly. I am at Jay Snell on Twitter, and Tim is at Bastard Machine. And that's it. We're done. We'll be back in a week to answer some more letters and perhaps talk about summer shows. Maybe there's some summer shows coming.
There could be. I hear that that's a thing.
It could be a thing. Mm-hmm. The summer shows are drifting around the corner and squealing their tires.
Here they come.
I can hear them now. All right. So we'll be back next week. But until then, Tim, have a good long weekend.
You too.
All right. Happy Memorial Day and bank holiday and whatever else happens worldwide to everybody out there. We'll see you next week.